MacCast, Wednesday, August 5th, 2015. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, I am back from Utah, back from Nerdtacular 2015. I just have to say, what an awesome show. We're going to be talking more about it later in this episode. As a matter of fact, I have my What the App Is That segments that I recorded at Nerdtacular, and we'll be talking to Scott Johnson, who really is the man who created the whole thing. It sort of came out of, well, he's going to describe it. I don't want to give away what he's going to tell you. He's going to describe how it came about, but it was this genesis around his podcasting, his artwork, and all the stuff that he does, and it has turned into one of my favorite events of the year. I really look forward to going to that event. It is great to meet all the podcasters who are there, all the people who come. Everybody is totally awesome. We're all nerds. We hang out. We chat, we discuss podcasting, we discuss nerd culture, we celebrate nerd culture, really. They have an awesome game room, and I know this year it was opposite Gen Con, and I know they do a lot of gaming things at Gen Con as well, but I really like Nerdtacular for its size. It's a nice, small conference, not too small. There's a lot of people that come there, but it's small enough that you get to just hang out, and you're all in one location, and so you're eating together, you're hanging out together, you're going to the talks together. It is just really, really fun. So can you tell I'm jazzed about being back? It revs me up every year just for geek and nerd and stuff and just for people. Just, you know, it's nice to know that there's still really great people in the world and you get to kind of celebrate and do that. So excited about that. We're going to get into the What the App Is That episodes. These are things that I started doing a couple years ago because I realized the best way to do app discovery or find out about apps is from your friends. And at Nerdtacular, it's a bunch of my friends hanging out there. So I thought, I'll grab their phones, I'll grab their devices, and I'll look at what's installed on there and find something that I don't know what the thing is. And then I will discover a great app, a great new app through their device. And I share those with you. And it's worked out really great. You've enjoyed them in the past. So we continue to do those every year. It's sort of become our little tradition. I have that and a couple news stories, just a couple things we're going to touch on in this episode. We're going to be talking a little bit about the next generation Apple TV. There's some new information regarding that. Also hints about some new iMacs and also a possible Apple wireless service. And then also I want to get into one of the latest exploits. There's been a couple exploits that have come out recently. ThunderStrike 2, which is a Thunderbolt thing that sort of riffs off of the ThunderStrike exploit we heard about in a couple months ago, I think it was. That we're not going to really get into because I don't think it's that much of a threat, and I think it's something that Apple is going to address. I mean, it's a serious exploit, but kind of all the things that need to go into that. But there's also this DYLD print-to-file exploit that I think we mentioned a couple episodes ago. Some new developments there. It's now in the wild, and I want to talk about that, what the potential risks are, and how you can maybe better protect yourself until Apple comes out with an official patch. And then also some new news about Beats 1 and listening to shows that you possibly missed. So we're going to talk about that. Then we'll get into What the App Is That. And that's going to do it for this show. But before we get into everything, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors. And that is Gazelle. You know, there's new iPhones coming soon. We've got the iPhone 6S, 6S Plus. And maybe you've got some older devices around, or maybe you want to sell your current iPhone to actually get some cash to help fund buying a new iPhone. Well, Gazelle is a great way to do that. They give you cash for your old iPhone, your iPad, your old Apple products. It's also a great way to get some cash maybe for an Apple Watch if you haven't picked up one of those yet. But basically, they want to buy your current devices. And what I love about Gazelle is how easy and simple they've made the process. They give you a fair an upfront offer for your old devices. They'll even buy broken devices. So don't worry if you've got a cracked screen on there. Just let them know as you're going through the process, hey, it's broken. But they will give you some money for those as well. And all you have to do is go to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. You find your item. You tell Gazelle a little bit about the condition, the accessories you have. You know, do you still have the original power cables, those sorts of things. And then you get a risk-free offer for your gadgets. And they even pay for shipping. And in many cases, they'll even send you a box. So you don't even have to worry about, how do I package this thing up and get it to them? You can just fill out a form. They'll send you a box along with the shipping label. You put it all together. You send it in there. And then you get paid fast by check, by PayPal, or you can choose Amazon gift card option, which gives you an extra 5% on your offer. That's actually my favorite way to do it. The offer process takes literally less than a minute, so do it today, because the longer you wait, gadgets will lose value over time. So you want to get in there, you want to get your offer as soon as possible. And, you know, as we get into the iPhone 6 and 6S launch in the fall, closer and closer we get to that, the prices are going to be dropping. So you got to kind of time it. You got to play the game a little bit, but they, again, make it really easy. And they've handled over 2 million trade-ins. They've paid out over $175 million to their customers, and over 90% of people using Gazelle report having an excellent experience. So what are you waiting for? Take a minute to find out what your iPhone, your iPad is worth. Go to gazelle.com to find out, and a big thank you to them for their continued support of the MacCast. So let's talk about Apple TV. Not a lot has been happening with the Apple TV hardware. A lot of people, we've had a lot of rumors. A lot of people are wondering, when are we going to get a new Apple TV? I myself, I love my third gen Apple TV, but you know, it's getting a little long in the tooth. Well, Mac Rumors this week said, according to BuzzFeed's sources, that we will get a new Apple TV hardware in September. This is reportedly going to happen at the same event where they're going to announce the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus. As far as what it's going to be, well, it looks like they're going to try and pack a bunch of new features in a little bit slimmer package. So the profile is supposed to get a little slimmer, thinner. It's going to have an A8 processor. The big change we're hearing is that it's going to have a touchpad-based remote. They claim it's going to be drastically improved compared to the current version, which I don't think would be too much of a stretch. I love the little aluminum remote, but that thing is so easy to lose. And it's kind of been that same form factor for forever. So new remote with a touchpad. I'd love to see a touch screen on there, but that's not what we're hearing, just that it's going to have a touchpad. I don't know how that's going to work. I think they're still going to have a couple physical buttons from some of the rumors we've been hearing. But can't wait to see the new design on that. There's going to be a new operating system that is going to have support for a full app store. We're reportedly getting developer APIs so the developers can actually start to write apps for the Apple TV, and Siri voice control. I hope that on the app side of things, that Apple is going to be pretty strict about how you can put an Apple TV app together and the kinds of applications you can throw on there. Because I could see, without some really tight controls in terms of what you're allowed to do and not do, you could end up with some pretty terrible apps for an Apple TV interface. I mean, you've got the remote, maybe a touchpad. Maybe you can hook up a Bluetooth game controller for some gaming stuff. That would be great. But it's really got to be integrated and work well together. So I just pray that Apple's just not going to open it up willy-nilly and we're going to get a bunch of weird stuff on there. But I really like the idea of third-party apps coming to the Apple TV. I think it's going to make it a much more robust device. And so, of course, if we're going to have more applications on there, you're also going to need more onboard storage to kind of put apps on there. So the rumor is it's going to have more internal storage for that as well. One thing that may be a disappointment for some of you is that BuzzFeed sources are also saying that Apple will not launch a new Apple TV streaming service alongside the new hardware. Apple is reportedly still trying to work out deals with the television and content providers. That process has been taking forever. I think we've talked about this in the past. Apple's been wanting to, or the rumor is that Apple's been wanting to put together this subscription TV service somewhere in the price range of, we're hearing everything from $10 to $40 a month, but it's sounding like $30 to $40 a month, where you'll be able to stream certain content from certain providers, ABC and Disney being one of the leading ones. Apple has a tight relationship with them, so it makes sense that they would probably be on there first. But it looks like those deals are still ongoing. Not everything is settled, so we're probably not going to see it an announcement of that service in September. They're not ruling out some sort of streaming TV service getting out before the end of 2015, but really at this point, a lot of the sources, most of the things we're hearing, make it sound like we won't see that service, if Apple can get it together, until 2016. That's a lot more likely. But at least we'll get some new Apple TV hardware, it sounds like, in September. And I fully suspect that that will actually happen. Some other new hardware we're hearing about is new iMacs, this time around coming from KGI securities analyst Ming-Chi Kuo. He expects Apple to update their iMac line this quarter. This is according to a story over on Mac Rumors. In the refresh, he expects Apple to add new processors and improve the display quality, mostly in the form of greater color saturation, which I guess they're going to achieve by using a different LED phosphor material, something called KSF. Now, beyond the Retina screen update to the 27-inch model that we saw last October, Apple really hasn't significantly updated the iMac line really since September 2013. So the timing seems right for Apple to do an update. Now, Kuo did not specifically indicate which models were getting updates, but it does seem likely to happen now because Apple's sort of been waiting on Intel for their next generation processors. And we now have more Intel Broadwell options, and also Intel Skylake processors are becoming available. And so Apple may decide now's the time to finally update the entire line with new processors. I would hope that they would go with the Intel Skylake models. The Broadwells, even though it's taken a while for them to get up to speed, they're, you know, being replaced by the Skylakes. So I'd really like to see Apple just, you know, leapfrog the Broadwells, go straight into the Skylake processors. I guess there it's going to just depend on what processors Apple can get and how the timing works out. But another hint that we might have some new iMacs on the way comes from the latest beta of OS 10.11 El Capitan. I keep doing that. El Capitan. I'm going to get it right one of these days. Consomac, and I'm not familiar with this site, I guess it's a foreign site, they discovered some references in the beta code, the latest beta, to a Mac with a screen resolution of 4096 by 2304, and that could potentially refer to a 4K 21.5-inch Retina iMac display. Apple already, of course, updated the 27-inch model to Retina, but many people have wondered when the 21-inch model would get the same treatment, so it makes sense that if Apple's going to do a big update across the line, that they would finally add Retina display to the smaller 21.5-inch iMac model. The new models could also help Apple boost sales along with their back-to-school promotion. They're doing the whole back-to-school promotion where you can get a set of free Beats Solo 2 headphones, I think. And you can even, if you want to kick in $100 of your own money, I think you can upgrade to the Beats Wireless. They're basically giving you a $200 Beats headphone credit. And if they had some new iMacs to go along with that, that could help juice up back-to-school sales, say, in the September-October timeframe. So again, it'd be nice to see some updated iMacs. If you've been thinking about buying a new iMac, it may be time to kind of hold off a little bit and see what Apple might announce or might do in the fall. Another story that hit pretty big this week was that Apple may be wanting to get into the wireless services business. Business Insider ran a story claiming that Apple was in early talks to launch its own mobile virtual network operator service in the United States and in Europe. This is what's commonly referred to as becoming an MVNO. They even went so far as to claim that an Apple source told them that Apple was testing the service right now here in the U.S. Now, as an MVNO, I have a hard time saying that, Apple would lease space from the carriers like AT&T and T-Mobile, and then they could sell coverage and data plans under their own brand. So rather than going in, buying an iPhone and getting service from AT&T, you could get service directly from Apple. You'd really be using AT&T or T-Mobile or Verizon's, whoever Apple would partner with, you'd be using their actual cell sites and things like that, but Apple could maybe offer a little bit better pricing, incentives, and things like that. So if you think of services like Cricket or some of the other ones that are here in the U.S., those are basically MVNO companies. They don't have their own cell towers. They don't have their own equipment. They actually lease equipment from the bigger carriers and then resell it. So that's the idea. The idea here is that Apple would actually be getting into that business and doing that. And this has been hinted at since Apple first announced that they were creating a cell phone. There have been rumors that Apple would launch an MVNO service. It's never really happened. But again, this week we have Business Insider saying, hey, they're doing some testing. They may already have a service going on here in the U.S. that they're testing out. Well, you know what? All this was put to rest after the Business Insider piece came out because Apple did an unusual thing. Normally, they don't respond to rumors, but they actually, in this case, issued an official statement stating that they have not discussed and are not planning to become their own cellular carrier in the future. And so that pretty much ended that story. So if you were getting excited about that, Apple kind of put the kibosh on it. I think some people still don't believe them. I think Jason Snell over at his Six Colors blog wrote a piece, you know, sort of analyzing the language and the wording in here, saying, well, it just says they're not going to be an MVNO. They could offer some sort of other cellular service. And as much as I think we would all really, really like that, I'm not sure that it's a good idea for Apple to get into the wireless services business. It just does not seem like a fun business to be in. As much as I'd like to rather deal directly with Apple on everything and not have to deal with AT&T or Sprint or Verizon or T-Mobile, I just don't see that happening. I don't know what you think. If you want to provide some feedback on this story, shoot me an email, mattcast@gmail.com. But a couple of other little things that are slightly related only by the fact that they're about the iPhone. There was a cool story this week that said Siri might become a more personal assistant. Again, this came from Business Insider. They claim that Apple employees have been asked to test a new Siri service that would allow the digital assistant to answer and transcribe your phone, answer your phone basically, and transcribe your phone messages. If you weren't available, basically she could answer your incoming calls instead of sending them to voicemail and then offer to take a message. And then once the message had been taken, it would be sent off to iCloud, be transcribed, and then the text translation could be sent to you. And I guess the idea here is that as far as leaving voicemails, that's a very easy thing to do. But you know, as you and I know, listening to voicemails can be a big hassle. It's much easier just to read through them, get the information, and things like that. I would imagine, too, that if the voicemail was related to, say, an appointment or a meeting or something like that, maybe Siri could then offer to change your schedule, update information, those sorts of things. So say you had a schedule on your book, she could check. And you know, I'm just extrapolating on this. It's just thinking outside the box. But this would be very cool, right? Is if you could get a message, someone says, hey, you know, the meeting we had on Friday, I need to move that to 4 o'clock. And if Siri could go in and say, hey, Dave called, he wants to move your meeting to 4 o'clock. Is that okay? And you say yes. And then your calendar gets updated. How cool could that be? But I think in this first implementation, it's just simply translating the text and sending that information to you so that you could reply or respond to that. So that would be very cool. They also claim that given permission, Siri could provide the caller your location and details on why you couldn't answer the phone. I guess that could be useful. To me, that seems like a little bit too much information. But again, if it's an opt-in only service, that seems all right. As far as when we might see Siri actually answering our phone calls, they say the service could appear sometime when iOS 10 releases. The assumption would be that would be sometime during 2016. And that, of course, is predicated on the fact that they test it out. They find that this sort of service is useful and something that people want, and also that the project stays on track. But I'm all up for Siri becoming a more personal assistant. How about you? The other thing that I wanted to talk about is the iPhone 6C, because it had been seeming for a while like the iPhone 6C was going to be a thing that would be launched alongside the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus. Many people were thinking that it was going to be a 4-inch variant of the iPhone, probably at a lower price point, ditching the plastic casing of the iPhone 6 or the iPhone 5C and going with the same metal casing that you see in the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. Now, according to the latest information from DigiTimes, they say that while Apple did originally intend to develop the successor to the iPhone 5C using 20 nanometer technology for the chipsets, they claim that Apple now wants to use a 14 to 16 nanometer FinFET chip manufactured by TSMC and Samsung. The only problem there is that that technology won't be ready in time for a 2015 launch. So it means that Apple would be able to produce a more powerful and more energy efficient iPhone 6C, but it also means that that might not ship until the second quarter of 2016. And that would actually back up some of the latest information we've heard from multiple sources that have hinted that a low-cost iPhone device wouldn't be coming until sometime next year. And then finally in the news for this week, I do want to update you on this DYLD print-to-file exploit that we talked about a couple shows ago. Back then, it had only been sort of a proof of concept. We hadn't seen it in the wild. Well, that has all changed. The DYLD print-to-file exploit, which is an exploit in OS 10 10.10 Yosemite, it's a vulnerability that could allow malicious code on your Mac to escalate privileges and gain root access. And then once that happened, then a malicious application could get in there and exploit your system for a number of different things. Well, the anti-malware company Malwarebytes has reported now that they discovered an attack using this vulnerability in the wild. That means there is something out there that's taking advantage of this, and you could possibly stumble upon it or get exploited by this attack. But, you know, that's just one side of the story. The second side of the story is this something that we need to be concerned about? And in looking into it, it looks like the current exploit is supposedly being used to launch something called VSI Installer that is then installing some adware, junkware on your Mac. And so you could run across it, but there are already some security things that Apple has done that are in place that can protect you from this. Even though Apple hasn't officially patched the full bug in OS 10 10.10.4, the latest version of Yosemite, they are working on some things, but they've also done some other steps that will protect you in the meantime. So the DYLD print to file has already been patched by Apple in OS 10 10.11 El Capitan beta and also in OS 10 10.10.5 beta, which is the next beta that's going to come out for OS 10 Yosemite. Apple did just release that third version of 10.10.5 beta to developers. So my guess is that we should see that update soon. So the patch is coming. It's probably going to be here in the next couple of weeks. But in the meantime, Apple has already revoked the certificate for the junkware. So if you're using Gatekeeper, that will prevent any malicious application from being launched without, you know, explicit intervention from you. So that's going to protect you. Apple has also began to update their automatic anti-malware definitions, the X-Protect definitions, that will recognize and also reject the junkware. So you won't even be able to install it at all if your definitions have been updated, and they should have been. So it's going to be very hard to install this exploit, first of all. And second of all, the 10.10.5 update should fully patch against it, and that should be out any time. So one thing you can do now to greatly protect yourself is make sure that Gatekeeper is running, because if it is, again, you're going to have to really do some extra work to get the malware installed. To check that, you're going to want to go into your system preferences, into security and privacy, click on the general tab, and then just make sure under the section for allow apps downloaded from that it's not set to anywhere. If it is set to anywhere, you're going to want to change it. You will probably have to click the little lock icon and then enter your admin and username and your admin username and password so that you can make changes. And then just change the setting to Mac App Store and Identified Developers, or even Mac App Store if you only install things ever from the Mac App Store. I typically leave mine on Mac App Store and Identified Developers because I'm going to download apps only from good known developers. And that's the other thing that you can do to protect yourself. Make sure you're only downloading, installing apps from trusted sources, meaning developers that you know or have heard of, you're familiar with, ones that have been around in the Mac community for a long time and are trusted. And I know you may not always recognize or know a developer. If there is a piece of software that you rely on that you want to install, if there's any sort of question, and you should be doing this anyway, if there's any question, just do a little bit of research. Google around, investigate, ask questions of other people you know in the Mac community who you trust. Hey, have you heard of this company? Do you run this software? Is it safe to install? It's pretty easy to do a couple minutes of research to determine, you know, is this thing good or bad? Does it have a bad reputation? Does it have a good reputation? You can find that stuff out. I mean, we have the internet, people. So Do that. You know, you don't have to get crazy about this stuff, but a little extra caution, especially when we have an exploit like this out in the wild, is going to be your best defense against getting exploited. And with that, that's going to do it for the news for this week. I do have one tip for you before we get into the What the App Is That segments from Nerdtacular. Beats 1 in Apple Music. That's Apple's worldwide radio station. If you've been listening to it, you probably know that, you know, it runs just like traditional radio. They have certain programs that air during the week at certain times. And up until now, if you missed a show on Beats 1, it was just like traditional radio. You really couldn't go back and listen to it. They did have some playlists that they would put together so you could actually hear the tracks that were spun during the show. But with that, it was just like a traditional playlist. You just get song after song after song. You got none of the DJ comments or the interactions or sort of that radio experience out of it. Well, this week that changed. Apple has now added what they're calling Beats 1 replays for many of the shows that are airing on Beats 1 radio. So if you want to listen to the full radio show after it's been aired, what you can do now is you can go in on the Apple Music app on your iOS device, hit the radio tab, and then tap on the Beats 1 logo, not the little Listen Now button, but the Beats 1 logo. And then if you scroll down to the section of featured shows, you can find the show that you want to replay. Tap on that, and then tap on Connect, and you can select the show that has a replay. It'll be denoted by the word replay in the title. And if you click on that, you can listen to the whole show all over again. So if you missed a show or you just want to re-listen to a show, that's how you can do it. There was some speculation that Apple did not have the licensing and the agreements in place to kind of do that. But almost a week after we started hearing that, we now have these Beats 1 replays. So I thought that was pretty cool. I've talked about it on the show before. I'm really digging Apple Music. I really like it a lot. And I'm listening to a lot of content. And there's a couple shows, and I think we addressed this actually last episode when we were talking about Apple Music with the Amigos. A lot of us wanted the ability to kind of replay the entire radio show, and now we can. So that's how you do it. And there's one little tip for you in this episode. But what do you say we get to some app recommendations? Like I said at the start of the show, I had a great time at Nerdtacular, I just want to jump right into the What the App Is That segments. So we're going to kick it off with Scott Johnson. I hope you enjoy this stuff. Here you go. What the App Is That? Nerdtacular 2015.
All right, Nerdtacular 2015. We're closing it out, and we do this at the end of every Nerdtacular, it seems like. We've done this for a couple years now. I'm sitting here with Scott Johnson, the creator, inventor, thinker, man, the person who put this all together many, many moons ago. I think I want to start with talking about Nerdtacular, because this thing is awesome. And I know people listen to my show. Some people know about it. Probably not everybody. So you want to tell people just what this thing is? I mean, it's kind of hard to describe sometimes.
It is. I have a hard time even explaining to my extended family. They don't really get it. In fact, a lot of them are here today, and I'm not sure they still get it. But it's an annual event, originally started as just a great way, and at the time locally, just locally with fans, a great way to say, hey, you like my shows or my comics or whatever, come on out, we'll do a movie, we'll hang out, we'll have some prizes, and just kind of have a little get-together on a day. And that sort of started evolving. We started in 2007, and every year it's gotten bigger and bigger. Now it's a full two-day, three-day con where we have panels and experts and entertainers and concert and lots of people from around the world that I work with, including you, that come in and bring this extra layer of podcastership and all this stuff. And we cap our tickets just under 700 so we can keep it nice and sort of, the word's not intimate, but, you know, so that we can all talk to each other, you know. We can actually have conversations with fans and know what they like, what they don't like. And we give away a lot more prizes now, and we have a lot of fun, and we have these, you know, sort of special lunches. And we just make a big event out of a weekend where everybody kind of gets to come hang out. We play a lot of board games. Just kind of nerd culture is celebrated. Everyone's invited. Nobody's turned away. And this is our ninth year, and it just keeps getting crazier and crazier.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I love coming here. I tell everybody this is my replacement for the old Podcast Expo. So if anybody ever went to the old Podcast Expo, it was in this place in Ontario, California. There's an airport there and hotels. There's, like, no place to go. So everybody's kind of got to hang out and just you know, be together. And that's what this is for me, too. It's everybody just, you know, being together, hanging out, and having a good time.
It's a lot of the same people, too. So this is where if you want to see Brian Ibbett, or you want to see Tom Merritt, Veronica Belmont, you want to see Adam Christensen, or me, or in this year's case, we had some really notable people from Blizzard Entertainment who make all the video games that a lot of my community love, and they came and spoke to us. You want to see Terpster and Patrick Beja and all these people. It's like, it is very much like a podcaster's expo, but it didn't really, wasn't planned to be. It just kind of evolved in turn.
So, well, now you've really got multiple tracks. So you've got the tabletop thing, you've got the evening shows with great, you know, concert. Marion Call, amazing. It was cool. The first night I was here, I just ended up in the bar next to her. I had never heard her music before. I didn't know anything about her. And we just started chatting, and we talked about Alaska and all this great stuff. And then I went to her concert. Great music. It was, I mean, I love that kind of discovery that happens here, too.
Yeah, you're able to bump into people who you either don't expect to meet or have something to offer you didn't know they would have. One of my favorite things is finding out that something I did many episodes ago on some show has some crazy impact on somebody's life. Things I didn't even have a thought about it after I posted it. It's like, yeah, I said some interesting things here. I put it up, especially my diary podcast, which is very personal. And I put it there and I kind of forget about it. And then months later, I have somebody come up to me at this con and hug me and cry and tell me that was a turning point for them and they needed to hear it then and that's what got them to come out here. And it's really, really satisfying. It's also satisfying to see people from, I mean, some people from New Zealand, Australia, I mean, every continent. We had somebody from every single continent outside of Antarctica, as far as I know. May have been a penguin around here, for all I know. But we had so many people from so many far-off lands, England, Sweden, everywhere, France, that in some ways I feel guilty. It's like, man, you guys came all the way here just to see us. And then I talk to them, and it's their favorite thing, and they'll just keep doing it. They love it so much. So I don't know how it works, to be honest. To be honest, the whole magic of it, whatever makes this special, and I agree that it is, I don't really know where that bubbled or how it's contained, but I think the community is a large part of that, and without them, we wouldn't do it. So,
I mean, it comes out of you creating a space and sort of making it a place for it to happen and setting certain things up, but then also just sort of stepping back and letting it, I think, go and be what it's going to be.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, I plant a pretty good seed probably, and it's kind of the child of me and my family. We this is a big thing for us every year. We work hard on it together, even the kids, and you know, we are very fond of it in regards to its ability to be a hallmark of our family. So I think we do lay a pretty good foundation, but how it builds from there is fascinating. And, you know, to hear guys like Jeff Cannata, who's been a longtime internet friend, but we've never really done anything together. He was able to come out with Anthony Carboni and do their show and do some other panels and hang out and stuff. And his texts to me afterward were outright shocked from him, how much fun he had, how quote-unquote special the weekend felt to him, and how special he felt in it. He felt a kind of admiration and appreciation from fans of his here that he doesn't get at any other kind of experience. And those kinds of things really make this feel worth it, because it's a lot of stress, it's a lot of pain in the butt, it's a lot of money, it's a lot of things. And we don't really make a bunch of money. We make enough to kind of, you know, cover everything, and we walk away without being in the red. But it's the today every year, the final day, where I really feel that satisfaction, because you just see it on the faces and hear it on the lips of people who got something big out of this. So I'm really proud.
Yeah, it's really great. So if you haven't checked it out, look for it next year, 2016. Then, you know, I think everybody's going to take a break, but then the planning will start all over.
Check out all the photos, we'll have videos up. You can see for yourself what this thing's about.
Yeah, hashtag NT15 if you want to see everything that went on Twitter. You will get a good sense of what went on. All right, let's get to what the app is that. All right, so I was going through your phone, and actually, this one I'm aware of. It's not something I have, but what I noticed was this normally links up to a piece of hardware, and it's Jawbone Up app is on your phone. I don't see a Jawbone on your wrist. So, Scott Johnson, what the app is that, and what's going on here?
Well, all right. So I'm always looking for – I've been big on improving my fitness over the last couple of years. I've lost about 55 pounds in about a year and a half, 2 years.
He looks great, by the way.
Thank you very much. Some people think I look a little too skinny, but this is right the weight I want to be. I want to be 200 pounds from here on out. It's right where my doctor says I should be. I want to be here. I'm trying to be proactive, right? Eating better, working out, running, jogging, all that. And I'm always looking for something that's good at tracking things. And I have absolutely loved the iPhone 6s. And I guess 5S had the
little chip in it.
Yeah, so the health tracking stuff has been phenomenal. Not in its own, like, singular way, but other apps taking advantage of it, parsing that data, giving you information you wouldn't have, visualizing it, and so on. And there are some pretty good apps here and there, and I kind of just keep trying them to see what I like. And I read a Verge article that was trying to rank them, and they mentioned this Jawbone Up app, and they said, this is an app that works with the Jawbone Up, but you don't have to have any of the Jawbone devices to use it. You can, and it will use it, but if you don't, and this is iPhone only, by the way, it will use the HealthKit data in the device. So I thought, well, all right, it seems a little weird. I'm not really a Jawbone fan, except Len Peralta's old podcast. That was a good show. But I have no real reason to support Jawbone by any means, but I downloaded this thing, and it is my favorite fitness app, period. And I've used a ton of them. It tracks food. It tells me what I'm eating, if it's any good. I get a daily, basically a grade for the calories I'm taking in, too much sodium, too much fat, whatever. I can kind of tailor what I eat to that. Let you scan anything. It's a huge database of existing food. Their portions seem more accurate to me than other apps, so you don't have to go fiddle with them. It tracks all my steps all day. I have a goal of 10,000 a day as a minimum. I try to go at least 150% of my goal every day if I can, and it's very rewarding to pop that open and see this shining thing saying, you've done it, way to go. So it's got that kind of feedback. It tracks sleep patterns. More importantly, it gives kind of a diary all day, every day, of various things you're into and may encourage you. Like, looks like you're really moving. Tell up what you were doing, and you can actually say, well, this was me walking around a convention all the time, and kind of keep a journal. So you can go back and say, well, what was I doing when I was doing that many steps or whatever? It also encourages you when it makes sense to up your goals. Say, like, you seem to easily get to 10K before half the day was over. Do you want to go to 11? Like, lots of little encouraging things, stats about why good nutrition is important. Not just fluff, but, like, usable info. And there's great ways to sort of break down the kind of activity, what part of the day it happened in. So you can kind of look at your day and go, probably use a little more walking after lunch or something. And that sort of thing. So, I mean, normally these kind of utilities or these fitness apps are kind of boring, but interface-wise, just slick, fast, awesome. It's almost like, what's it like? It's like somebody making, I know what it's like. It's like somebody making an incredible television. Okay, we'll call that the iPhone. And then somebody else made the world's greatest VCR. But they also made a VHS tape, and it turns out the VHS tape is better than their VCR, and I'm using their VHS tape without their VCR. So it feels a little weird that I'm not using their device, but clearly they knew that this was going to be a thing, and it also is some good brand recognition. So they were a non-starter for me forever, and now suddenly Jawbone Up is my jam.
It's your fitness app. I'm just watching you go through the visualizations. I mean, the visualizations are great, the graphs and charts and things like that, just the color schemes. I love stuff that's well-designed. I know you're a designer, you're an artist too, so I think you appreciate these things as well, and that always helps.
Yeah, I agree. Quick interface, use my thumb for everything, type thinking, I think is really smart these days. If you're not doing that, you're making bad apps. And I guess it's just surprising to see something that's supposed to be the supporting utility for a piece of hardware actually be this well thought out and this well integrated. I mean, it kills anything Apple's got natively in the device, which seems to be the norm for Apple these days. It's like they barely make a thing. It kind of works. It's good enough. But somebody somewhere is going to make a third-party app that kills it. My thinking there is, I could be wrong about this, and I actually think this of the Mac now these days too. You know, why is Final Cut a little weird now? Probably because it's okay for everyone involved if Adobe and Premiere do really well, because it's going to sell Macs, it's going to sell Adobe. It's the model they've figured out with the App Store, which is we'll make the basics, but someone's always going to make a better mail client than us. Someone's always going to make a better calendar app than us. So we're going to get 30% of everything those people sell of their stuff anyway, and tons of traffic to the App Store and all the other reasons you want them in your store. I think Apple's philosophy is, I actually think it's a good one. I think people complaining that Apple's software has suffered are missing that financial point. I think they're just making what they have to, and that's good enough, and most people are going to be fine with it. People who don't care to upgrade are going to be fine, but the rest of us are like, you know what, I want to try something that maybe is a little bit better. So I'm using the Google Calendar app, I'm using a Jawbone Up fitness app, and I'm using Inbox for my email client. I guess that's Google as well, but anyway, I just have been so impressed with this app's ability to take good data and turn it into something real useful. So.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think, you know, Apple's strategy of late has been, we're going to give you everything you need out of the box at a basic level, and then that allows you to discover the platform, discover what you can do with it, and then when you sort of reach that limit, you go out and find something else, and it works out great. So this is an awesome example of that. So cool. Well, so people should check out the Up app. Scott, thanks for playing What the App Is That. Anything else you want to let people know about?
Oh, gosh. Well, we'll get back in the swing of things, get shows going and stuff. We just finished a Kickstarter for my comic webcomic collection at myextralife.com/book. You can go kind of see what it's about. Some have asked if you didn't get in on the Kickstarter, will there be some copies of the book after the fact? And the answer is yes. So there'll still be some sort of store version of the book. But I want to thank anybody who may be listening to this who did support it. We did really well, and I'm super thrilled to even be involved with it. August is Make a Book Month, so I'm going to be swamped. But so that's coming up. But you want to get status on that, kind of see how that stuff's going, just follow me on Twitter. Find me at Scott Johnson, and everything else is at frogpants.com.
Perfect. Yeah, and people should check out, you know, you do all this podcasting stuff now, but I always forget, you know, you got the webcomic, which is great. MyExtraLife.com is, yep, so people should check that out, and great artwork. Awesome that you're doing a book. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, man. Thank you very much. Always a pleasure, man. Thanks for coming this year.
All right, Nerdtacular 2015. We're doing What the App Is That? I've got Brian Ibbett of Coverville with me. Also, Morning Stream and Film Sack. Yeah, they did the awesome Film Sack Live thing here. So check out that episode when it airs, because it was hilarious on the 89 Punisher with Dolph Lundgren. It was great. So that'll be up on the feed, I'm sure, soon, if not already, by the time you hear this. But the other thing I got to say about Brian is I think you are one of the only other podcasters I know who's been doing this stuff as long as I have.
Yeah. There's a few of us. You know, Dave Slesher and Don and Drew are still doing it. But yeah, I mean, we're the old guard, right? We're like the statues in front of the podcasting museum are going to be modeled after us.
Yeah. Are you over 1,000 episodes of Coverville now?
Yeah, 1,078. Yeah, it's crazy.
So amazing, amazing. Okay, enough back talk. Let's get to What the App Is That. So I perused your phone. I found an app. It looks really cool. The icon looks great. It looks to be a game, but you tell us about it. Card Crawl. What the App Is That?
Yeah, so Card Crawl is a game, a pub game, basically. You're playing in a pub, a card game against another kind of swords and sorcery character, and you're basically both laying out cards to beat the other one. And you've got four spots in front of you. A left hand, a right hand, like a repository, like a storage slot, and then fourth one is, I'm going to pull this up now.
While he's doing that, I'm going to describe it. Like, the artwork on this thing is amazing. The icon looks great. It's kind of like this barbarian, very cartoony, very stylized. I mean, the art is amazing, even on the settings screen. And so you're kind of playing this guy. He almost looks like a goat guy. He's got these weird goat ears, but he looks great. But he's, you know, got his tankard of ale there, and he's ready to go, and he's laying out the cards. So
right, okay. So yeah, the middle one, the second one is your actual health. How could I forget that one? So you get four cards dealt to you, and you can put swords and shields and objects to use in your hands. You're also going to be dealt cards that have enemies on them, and you'll actually use the swords and the shields against those enemies. And the object is to get through your entire stack of cards, which are 50 cards, and make it through to the end with some health left. And so, you know, for example, I'll put the shield over in my right hand. I'll put the sword in the left. I could put those anywhere. I'm going to store the potion. And as soon as you've got one card left, he redeals new cards to you. And you've got to start clearing. Once you've got your four cards filled up, you've got to start clearing out those other cards or your cards. So you can use your sword, for example. I'm going to use the sword against the slime. It takes the slime out and clears up this spot where I could put another shield. You can use, you know, you can block with the shield, so you can get rid of an enemy that way, and it keeps you from losing health. And then you can use the actions and the potions by dragging them into your hands and then equipping them. Like I said, the object is to just get rid of all of the cards.
Okay, so you're trying to clear the cards, and there's two rows of cards. There's kind of an upper row where things are coming out, and then you have, like you're saying, the stuff you're holding or carrying, and you're dragging cards on one or the other, and then different effects and things happen.
There's a great tutorial in the game that walks you through how to play it, obviously. And as you play, as you win games, you'll actually win new cards that get unlocked, that get added to the cards that will come up that get shuffled into your deck. So you'll get new actions, new potions, things like that. And it really keeps, it gives a lot of replayability to the game because you're getting all this new stuff. And it's a great pick-up-and-play game. You know, a game usually takes maybe 3 or 4 minutes. You're waiting in line somewhere, you're, you know, whatever. It's a great pick-up-and-play game that you don't have to worry about you know, having to pause and go do something else and come back and carry on this like 20-hour game.
Yeah, it looks like a very cool kind of tweak on a, you know, it's a solid, almost like a solitaire type game. Yeah. I would assume it's just you against the AI.
It is, yeah, and really, I mean, as much as the AI is, it's kind of a solitaire game for all intents and purposes.
That's great. It looks awesome. Really so, so it's called Card Crawl. Card Crawl. So check that out in the App Store. And Brian, hey, thanks, man, for talking to us. So if people want to, you know, catch up on what you're up to, what you're doing, what, where should they go, what should they do?
Start with coverville.com. That's kind of the home site for my main show, Coverville. Although I say main, you know, TMS is becoming the main show for me, which is at frogpants.com/TMS. And from those two places, you can find everything else I'm doing. From the Helicarrier, which is over at fromthehelicarrier.com, too.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Adam.
We're here at Nerdtacular playing What the App Is That? See if I can do my own segment name. I'm here now with Barry Falk from For Mac Eyes Only, as well as co-host of Midwest Mac Barbecue, and now MacStock, the new MacStock, which I totally missed this year, and I need to go to next year.
Yes, you do, and everybody needs to go to it next year. So we still don't have dates yet. It'll be sometime during the summer of 2016, so we'll definitely let you know when it's when we have everything locked in.
Yeah, so keep your eyes out for that. We'll talk about it on the show as it gets around to next year. But we're playing What the App Is That here at Nerdtacular 2015. I've perused through Barry's phone, and actually we're going to do a twofer, I think, because there's one little quick one and then another one that I'm very interested in. I've sort of heard about, so we're going to cheat a little bit. But the one that I don't know is Bicycle App, or how to play something Bicycle App.
Yep. So I thought it was appropriate, since we're at Nerdtacular, which is all about gaming, but the Bicycle App is all about using decks of cards and playing various card games. And so maybe you're with a group of friends and you're playing cards and you forget some of the rules. The app is great with that, because what it does is you can either search by the name, so even if you're doing something like, say, Texas Hold'em Poker, you can type it in and it'll tell you the rules. Or it'll give you suggestions if you just have a number of players, say you're with a group of four and you want to play a kids game because the two of them are children. It'll give suggestions on what games would be appropriate, and then it tells you how to play. So it's a really handy tutorial and gives you all sorts of great suggestions. Like, I'd forgotten about a game called Crazy Eights, but I did a quick search, and sure enough, oh yeah, I'm like, I used to play that all the time as a kid. So it's a really neat app. It's free, and it's just a really handy tutorial to have with you.
Yeah, so looking at the icon, it's bicycle trading card, or trading cards, bicycle cards, playing cards. Yep. Yeah, you're playing cards. And so it's a little searching app, or helps you filter down and find you know, card games to play. Exactly. Which is cool. So you could probably discover some really new ones that you haven't heard before, or get out your old classics. Barry's scrolling through the list. So you got Go Fish. I've never heard of Napoleon. Spades I've played before. So you can quickly just flip through and browse, find something that looks interesting for a certain number of players, it looks like. Or it looks like there was even one player, so maybe different solitaire games.
Right. And that's the thing, is like, it just takes you back into, you know, I used to play cards all the time, but yeah, I just did one, and let's do a search, and so it's got all sorts of versions of solitaire on here, and it's really handy to do. It even does like a dual deck version if you want to do that as well.
Yeah, it looks like there's a couple of buttons at the top. Are those of any significance, or is that just marketing? It looks like, yeah, the different brands of trading cards and things like that. So obviously it's tied into the bicycle trading cards and things like that. But this looks awesome, because this could be really handy.
Yeah, exactly. It's just something nice to have. And you know, if you go camping or you're with your family, it's a great app just to have something, try a little, something new that maybe figured, eh, let's try something we've never played before. And you can all easily, you know, download it. Everybody can have it on their phones or their iPod Touches. And it becomes a great tutorial. Plus, like, if you have certain card games and you're teaching people how to play, like, the differences between one pair, two pair, three of a kind, that way they can see the order it is. So when they're playing certain games, it's really handy. They don't have to keep asking, and they can just do a check, which is helpful when you don't want to give up what's in your hand.
I would imagine another handy thing, this comes up with my family when we're playing card games, is growing up, you have like family rules.
Right.
And sometimes there's like a debate, like, what is the real rule for this game?
Exactly. Now you can go, okay, let's play the canonical version, not the, you know, put everything into the pot, free parking on Monopoly.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. And so the other one we're going to cheat on a little bit, and I've heard about this, and I wanted to do this because there's an Apple Watch component. It's called Lifeline.
Yeah. So this is a game, and it's a single player game, and I've got it right when it came out, and it's a lot of fun. It's a story. It's sort of like a text adventure in that respect, and it's about this person who's stranded on a planet, reaches out through his communicator, and is just looking for someone to talk to because he's lost, he's stranded, he's scared. And we are the only one that can talk to him. So we reach out to him, and it sets it up in a very nice storyline, and then it comes to a point where there's a decision. And so it comes up basically with two buttons, and you decide. That's where it works really well on the watch, because you can scroll with the dial, the digital crown, see the story as it's unfolding, and then the two buttons appear, and then you just tap the button that you want a decision. And it's not a hard story, but it's very engaging, which is great. So it's fun to play. He can die, so you might have to start over. Otherwise, you continue throughout the story, and then after you're done, you get a great ending. And it's just one of those things that I never thought I'd be spending like minutes to hours staring at my watch playing a game. But it really is that good. And it synchronizes between the watch and the phone, so if you decide you really want a bigger screen, it works fine. But I found this, again, this is leveraging the power of the watch, something quick, something easy to use. The interface is great for the watch, and I think they really hit upon something that they can develop more games. And in fact, I believe a Lifeline 2 is supposed to be coming out later this year.
Cool. So have you played all the way through it? Is it a pretty quick game, or is it only quick because you were playing it a lot?
Yeah, I mean, I was on an airplane, and so you can do it offline as long as you have Bluetooth connection with the phone and the watch. I would say probably about 4 or 5 hours of gameplay. I did go back, and there's a feature. Once you've gone through the story, you can play it again, and you don't have to wait. Oh, that was the other thing. If there's a point where he needs to sleep or he needs to climb a mountain, for example, it's not real time, but it will definitely have a delay. So at some point, the game won't play anymore, and you have to stop playing it, which is actually, I think, is okay, because then you could do something else. And then it'll give you a notification on the watch or on your phone. It's time to move again, and it'll give you the summary, and then you continue on. And usually most of the interaction is fairly quick, so it's not like you have to make a decision, wait a long time, make another decision, wait a long time. That really only happens once every now and then. But I'd say I played it over about a week and a half, 2 weeks total, and I found it extremely engaging.
I've heard a lot of good things about this one, so I'm going to have to check that out. Well, Barry, thanks for walking us through a couple apps. Anything else you want to let people know about what you're up to, or maybe Twitter, those, how they can follow you?
Sure. So Mike Potter, who's the host of For Mac Eyes Only, he and I are getting together. We're starting to work through the details for next year's Mac Stock, so it's very exciting. Well, looks like we've got some great ideas, things that worked really well this year, things that didn't, or new things we want to try. So we'll talk about that. And otherwise, you can catch me on Twitter at FulkB, which is FULKB.
Awesome. Thanks, Barry.
Thank you, Adam.
Now I have Julie Keel with me here at Nerdtacular 2015. We are playing What the App Is That? She does the Sci-Fi Tech Talk podcast from time to time. You're not on that full time now, are you?
Oh, we do it weekly most of the time. Nerdtacular kind of interrupted our schedule, and summers are often tough. We have 3 co-hosts, and the reason we have 3 is because when we had 2, we could never get together in the summer. But, so for the most part, it's weekly.
Right, yeah, she's usually on there. You'll catch her on there. But peruse through the phone, and we found an app that I don't recognize. That's how we play What the App Is That, and it's called Road Trippers. So, Julie, What the App Is That?
You know, this is interesting because how I discovered Road Trippers was by a business card in a co-working space in Denver. I'd never heard of it either. But it's also a website, and it's an app, and it's an app to help you plan trips. So hence Road Trippers. But what's nice about it, and there's lots of apps to do that, is that you can put your trips together, and it will estimate costs, including, gas. You can say roughly what mileage you expect to get, and it will pull off actual price of gas averages, whatever, so it changes from time to time, and then you can share these and you can collaborate on them. I've done this a couple times myself, but I know somebody else that's planning a trip with a couple of friends, and so they've got this, it's like a Google Doc for trips, and it also brings in things that to do, you know, roadside attractions. You know, you can say, I'd be willing to go 30 miles out of my way to see a, you know, a prairie chicken that's 50 feet tall. It's in Rothsay, Minnesota, by the way. If you really doing a road trip where you're just out and about to see the sights, it can be really handy that way. And again, I know there's lots of other apps out there that can kind of do that thing, but I find this one to be kind of nice because you can save your trips and then share them with others and collaborate on them. And it does seem to pull in some interesting suggestions. It's almost like crowdsourced suggestions on things to do. So I find I'm using it more and more. Plus, you can also view other people's trips. You know, you can go out there and browse and where other people have gone and comments and, you know, things that you might not have discovered yourself. So,
all right. So I have a couple questions now. So there's a map. Obviously, you can plan out your trips. You showed me some of the saved trips and things like that. So in terms of points of interest, does it just do, like, roadside attractions and amusements, or will it do, like, restaurants and those sorts of things? And also, second question, I guess, would be, is it specifically focused on driving trips?
Good questions. First off, I will say I believe it's focused on driving trips.
Yeah.
But it is, it does encompass a lot of different things. You can identify what you're interested in, whether it's roadside attractions or places to stay. You can do campsites. You can do...
So if you're more of a hotel person versus a camping person, you're like, I'll rough it, that's fine. Or maybe you're an RVer, that type of person. Yeah, this looks really cool.
Yeah, I think it even has bed and breakfast types things. And I find that the app on my phone is cool. But I do find that I plan my trips on the website and then download them to the app. And I've actually done things like, I've got some trips in here that drive-in movie theaters. What? Where do you search for drive-in movie theaters? But yeah, I've got a one on here where somebody had suggested a bunch of drive-in movie theaters. It's like, okay, that's interesting. But yeah, I'm looking at the Discover Places screen here. It has accommodations, attraction and culture, camping and RV, entertainment and nightlife, food and drink, motoring, outdoors and recreation, points of interest, services in case your car breaks down, shopping and sports. So, you know, it kind of covers the gamut of what people like to do when they're traveling.
So when you search and find these things, can you then add them sort of to your route and it'll place little points so that you know when and where you need to stop along the way, those sorts of things?
Yeah, and it'll tell you how long it'll take you to get there. And sometimes you'll find essentially community comments on it saying, you know, this place was overpriced or this place is a must-see type of thing. So, yeah, it's I think it's the combination of... You know, you can kind of personalize your trip and then also get the crowdsourced, information and opinions. I'm discovering things I wouldn't otherwise be looking for. I mean, I wouldn't, when I put a trip together and all of a sudden somebody says, you know, there's this 50-foot prairie chicken, you know, within 10 miles. It's like, okay, why not? You know, that'd make a good selfie, right? So, I find I'm discovering things that I wouldn't just do if I was on Google Maps.
Sure, that looks very, very cool. Well, cool. Thank you for sharing that with us. It's called Road Trippers. There's an app and website, so people should check that out. And Julie Keel, thanks for chatting with us.
Thank you, Adam.
Still at Nerdtacular playing What the App Is That? I now have Andreas with me, and we looked through, found something on your iPad that I'm not familiar with. It is called Sampler, so I'm assuming it's an audio thing, but Andreas, what the app is that?
Yes, it's a sampler. And I, besides being a designer, I tinker around with music apps. But I'm now not at all any kind of musician. But Sampler is an excellent way to just load up 6 different samples. It can be drums, bass, anything. And play around with it in a couple of different ways. And you can play with like an electric bow. And you basically just point on the sample where you want to play.
Okay.
And you can loop up things. You can put effects on it, to put echo on it, and basically build a live beat, techno or whatever, experimental, with your fingers. And it's very tactile in that way. I tried a lot of the sequencer apps like the Cubase and GarageBand, but this one comes closest to what I like, and it's a lot of fun.
So I'm looking at the interface, and it looks like, so where, first question I guess I had was, where do you get the samples from? Are they built in? Can you get more? Do you have to put your own in?
There are some demos that you can start with that are an excellent way to see, like, okay, what kind of samples work. Because you can't really, you can play it like a piano, but it's not really the main thing you want to do. And then you can either use audio copy and different, some different, a couple of different apps to use audio copy. And also you can import directly from Dropbox. So you can load up Dropbox and then you can get your files in. And
so this is really about bringing in your own samples. So you might use something like Figure from Propeller Heads, or you might use something like GarageBand, do some loops and things like that, grab those, and then you're going to pull them into Sampler, and now you can sort of do these modifications on them, right?
Either do that, or you can also hook up, like either with a built-in mic or with a better mic, you can just sample live, either with an instrument singing or dropping things on the floor, and then play around with that.
Okay. And so then once you have it in there, it looks like you've got some sliders at the top. It looks like some things to control tempo and volume and stuff like that. But then the main part of the interface, you see a waveform, and it looks like there's little almost like keys or something like that. Now you were kind of playing with it and kind of tapping them. So you want to describe sort of what's going on there?
Yeah, so you have, how many is it? Seven different ways to play with the waveform. And one is just a regular piano key. So you can, the sample will start playing, and then whatever key you press, it will take it to that.
Adjust the sample to that key.
Yeah. There is stuff like something they call scratching. So you have a way to scratch it just like a LP or vinyl. And you can also play it like a tape deck and do that.
So like you're going back and forth with a tape deck, yeah.
And also with multiple, it's like multiple fingers you press down and it starts playing. And it makes for a lot of fun results that you don't really know what's coming, but it's a fun way to experiment with sound and experience or find out what a sound is built up of. Like you can kind of listen to a sound if you just want to listen to a microsecond of it, slow down with echo, and you completely change the nature of the sound.
Yeah, change the dynamic of it, yeah. So a pure sampling app, then you can layer all kinds of complexity on and see what sort of comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, cool. And it's called Sampler, and people should check that out. Andreas, I know you have a bunch of stuff that you do yourself. You want to tell people about that? I mean, you mentioned you do all these creative projects. I love the stuff that you do, so share that with people.
Yeah, the thing that's been on my schedule mostly when I'm not doing my day job has been making totems, a kind of a wooden fan art version of the totem from Monument Valley, which I played when it came out and directly fell in love with Totem, and I wanted him physically in my room. So I built that, and then it took off, and it's now linked from the app, so you can go to Etsy and buy it there.
Yeah, and you also make these great cruiser skateboards as well, right?
Yeah, that's been my like long-term hobby, to do woodworking and also combine what I like. I like to cruise on my longboard and I like woodworking, so it's a great combination of start making them and also put my graphics and design and illustrations on that.
Yeah, you also do great graphic design illustration work, and you got posters and stuff like that. Buyandreas.com, is that the best place for people to find that stuff?
Yeah, that's Buyandreas is what I use everywhere, so Instagram, Etsy.com. Yeah.
All right, great. Check it out. So, hey, thanks for playing What the App Is That.
Thank you.
All right, so we're at Nerdtacular 2015. We are playing What the App Is That. I have Hammond from Beyond the Playlist. I've perused through his iPad. I found an icon. It's got a little wizard on it, and anything with a wizard is awesome. So it's called MorphWiz. So, Hammond, What the App Is That?
Well, MorphWiz is an app that was developed by Jordan Rudess, the keyboard player from Dream Theater. And when you open it, it gives you a touch screen of a scale. And as you hit it, it kind of operates similar to Bebop did, except it gives you a bunch of different parameters you can work with. And as you hit the menu button, you can alter the wave sign, the synth, the scale, the range, the pitch. It gives you all this ability to alter the sound. But even without doing that, it has probably hundreds of sounds you can do and play with. Everything from the pretty to the absolute horrible. I mean, so yeah, it's a fun app, and it's really easy to play because the scales make it. He's built the scales so that if you don't alter them, you already sound like you know what you're doing, which is a benefit to a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm not sure if people can hear what's going on, but you're just putting your fingers on the they look like almost like little virtual strings. The UI is very kind of spacey.
Yeah, it is, and everything he does has this kind of design motif to it, and he's put a bunch of apps out. And they're all incredible music apps, but this one is the one that I like the most because it's easiest for me to use.
Yeah, so bring up the settings again. I just want to take a look at that and describe that to people. So you've got a bunch of sliders. You've got different like sort of waveforms and stuff, it looks like, and then you can adjust scale and range, pitch, volume, attack, all those sorts of things, the chorus. There's a lot of various options, but you're saying you can just kind of roll with the built-in ones?
Oh, yeah. Since he is an actual professional musician, he has made this app something that he could use right from the get-go. So he's made it very right out of the box, easy to use.
So is there a way to like save off settings? So if I tweak things, can I kind of save my own and things like that?
Yeah, if you go in and make the changes, you can save your preset right there on the save preset, and you can load your preset. So
this seems like something that would be fun to play around with, but also something that, you know, if you're a professional performing musician or something like that, you may even be able to use in a concert or something like that.
He's actually used this app on stage and in concerts. So that's kind of what he's done, is he's developed a bunch of apps that he can use.
All right, that looks very cool and a lot of fun. So if you're into music or just messing around with like synthesizers and things like that, check out, again, what's it called?
MorphWiz.
MorphWiz. On the App Store. And Hammond, you want to tell people a little bit more about what you do, your podcasts and things like that?
Yeah, I do two shows primarily. I do Grumpy Cast with Daryl Skeels, and then I do Beyond the Playlist, which is an exploration of the creative process.
Very cool. So check those out. Thanks, Hammond.
Thanks very much.
So there's how we play What the App Is That. I hope you discovered some new apps that you find useful or entertaining. I know that I did. I think I've downloaded every single one of those since doing those interviews. But I really think this is the best way. One of the best ways to discover apps, right? We do this with our friends. You find out what they like and get recommendations that way. So hopefully that helped you out. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, also Text Expander Touch for your iOS devices, as well as PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can find more information and details about all their great software by going to smilesoftware.com. Gazelle is the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth by going to gazelle.com. And TunnelBear, it's a really simple VPN app that allows you to browse privately and get around blocked websites. You can try it today by going to tunnelbear.com/MacCast. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media, and they are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, any feedback for me, you can shoot me an email or an audio comment. Just attach an MP3, an AIFF, a WAV, any kind of audio file, or just shoot me an email to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That telephone number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. And if you need show notes, including the links to all the great apps that were mentioned on this podcast, you can find those on the MacCast website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And if you'd like to hang out online between shows, we've got a number of communities dependent upon the social network of your choice. We've got them all covered. If you want to follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. Or if you prefer Google Plus, you'll find us on Google Plus at google.com/plus, and that's the plus symbol, /plus MacCast. So we try and make it really easy for you to find us. I look forward to seeing you online, but that's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.